Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Phil, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in at-home working meditation retreats. Welcome, Phil.
Yeah. Thank you, Jen. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for being with us.
Well, I'm very happy to be with you because this is one of my favorite things.
Oh, good. And it's fun because we used to, for a while, we had them pretty regularly, and we haven't had them for quite some time, and now we have another one scheduled. So we thought it would be really fun, especially for folks who may never have had the experience, not participated in one, to get to hear directly from someone who has.
Yeah, yes, yes. We did many of them a while back. And the ones that were my favorite is the kind I think we're doing this time, sounds like it anyhow, which is like a working meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Even after the first one, it just kind of, in a sense, changed my whole approach, if you want to say, to cleaning up, well, basically cleaning house.
Wow. Say more. That's so fun.
Yeah, well, that's what I chose, you know. I thought, okay, uh-huh. Well, my at-home retreat shall be like at the monastery, and I'll do the clean up the apartment for uh-huh. that period of time. And so, you know, we have this time where we do the working meditation, and so I would do it. And then we would have later on, you know, the recording and listening about it, and then we'd have an assignment about it, or we'd have something like what to look for, you know, just to
mm-hmm.
pay attention to.
Like a place, a focus. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, focus, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it until much later, or not that much later, but it wasn't during a working meditation retreat, but sometime after, that I would be cleaning the house and I would be approaching it in that same way.
I would be doing it
with that mind of meditation, you know, just automatically. I didn't even try.
Yeah, yeah. So the training that you received on that day, it sounds like opened up a whole other possibility for you of a way, a how, of approaching, in particular, cleaning your house, and that realizing that the training of that one day, and that I'm going to guess subsequently getting to participate in others and so kind of reinforcing mm-hmm. that training, you realize it just arose. It just was there. That ability to have that other way of approaching it was just there for you, even without saying, okay, now what I'm going to do is...
Exactly. It was like I was, well into the dusting and all that, and I'm noticing, you know, huh, this feels just like when I'm doing the working meditation at the, you know, in the, in our workshops. And it's been the same ever since. It's like there's this, kind of a reverence that it feels like comes with it. And it just makes the quality of whatever it is I'm doing in that period of time so much different, because there would be before, I don't want to clean my house, even though I like to clean my house. I don't want to clean it. It's not a house, it's an apartment. I don't want to clean it. And then, you know, maybe I'll do this and that and then get distracted. But it after those workshops, working, you know, meditation workshops, at home retreats, it just felt, yeah, it had the quality that felt very, very different.
Yeah, there's so many things about what you're pointing at, Phil, as you're talking, you know, that I don't want to clean the house, right? And it reminds me so much of the work we're doing in the year-long retreat right now, as we're really getting to see the various folks who chime in on our lives, right? As you say, I actually do want to clean the apartment, but there's this voice that says, yeah, I don't really want to do that. And even though we know intellectually, you know, all of life can be within practice, but we could really say all of life is practice, but it's mm-hmm. just that sometimes that conversation is so me. It's so just the water that I swim in. Sometimes we call it skin. That especially in my just day-to-day, this is my house and my stuff, and I'm so used to seeing it, and that it can be very hard to get a really good glimpse at it. And so I think that's one of the things that's so amazing about these days is we talk about folks who come on, come for the visiting monk program at the monastery, talk about how what's so helpful about working meditation is it most closely, you know, mirrors how our everyday life is. And I think this, these days, take it even one step further. It literally is how my life is because I'm in my house with my stuff, with my, you know, the karma that comes in front of my face, and we get to work with it, bring it into practice, and realize, wow, it can all be in that, I love that word you use, that reverence.
Yeah, it's just like, being at the monastery and doing the work there, only you're doing the work here, you know, in your own space, and it does, it seems, at least it did with me, to just automatically, in a sense, carry over into, you know, continuing on. It's just like, oh, here I am in this space, and this space now has become the monastery space, you know what I mean? There's
point?
A kind of a sacredness to it. Yeah.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true because you did it. You practiced in your own house for that day. And so now you know it's completely possible. Whereas there can be, I hear a lot of people talk about this, but yeah, well, I can do it at the monastery, but gosh, in my own environment, it's harder to translate. But it's like in that day, you prove to yourself it can be done.
Yeah, and yeah, it's really something. And you know, I'm sitting here, and I'm looking at the wall at this just looking at the wall, and I have this quote up there. It's a long quote, but the first line it says, "What you encounter, recognize, or discover depends to a large degree on the quality of your approach," and that really does say it all in that sense that the at-home meditation, working meditation really is what made the whole quality of my approach completely different.
Go ahead, please.
No, it's just that whole thing about encounter, recognize, and discover. We can't even do that unless we have this, you know, the quality of our approach is presence and just being there with whatever it is we're doing. And, you know, it's just like it just became a whole, and it is every time I clean, it's this whole kind of ritual, you know.
Wow. And I just got the image as you were saying that, you know, what we do on a day like this is we come together as Sangha and we hold hands to do that together because I think intuitively we know that that shift is possible, that attitude of mind that you saw open up for you on that day is possible, but it can be tricky to find it on our own, as we say, in our own environment. But then we come together with Sangha and we have the group discussions around it. There's, as you say, there are assignments, there's a focus. So there's really a practice framework to give us the tools to be able to actually make that shift that you're talking about.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. You know, it's just, it's kind of like a little or big miracle. I mean, just the what practice does when we're practicing together, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And Alina, the other thing when you were talking earlier that dropped in was, I just love that description you gave that what I saw is it's like we go from, you know, these things in my life, they're not really my life. They're just the things I have to do so that I can get to my life, right? And then much of our lives get swallowed in that process. But in what you're describing, something like that shift in attitude of mind makes everything my life. Right? The attitude, the reverence is everything. You know, it's kind of, I thought of the is it Gandhi who says, if you don't meet God in the next person, then I can't remember at the second part of the quote. But at any rate, it feels like it relates also to what were the things in our lives, you know, the activities of our lives. If we don't experience God in this, then what do we have? So it really gives us the opportunity to practice that reverence in everything.
It does. It really does. And I hope everybody has signed up for it, because it is such a treat. It is such a treat, and it does continue. I'm sure for everybody, it will just keep on giving.
Yes, exactly. And as you said that, what I saw was the more of us that show up for the day, it feels like the more all of us is carried. So really, each person's participation counts. It really exponentially grows with each person, adding what they're adding. Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The energy builds.
The energy builds. Well put.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us, Phil.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm looking forward to that.
we'll all be together for that on the, the 23rd. I'm sure Michael will give us the details on that.
All right. Yep. Thanks, Jen.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Take good care.
You too. Okay.
Bye. Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Phil. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry. Sherry, are you there?
Oopsie. Yes, I am.
There you are.
Hello, Michael.
There you are. Hello.
I had muted myself in addition to the other muting.
Yes. Yes, very courteous, very polite to keep the noise down. And we're glad to hear you now.
Oh, dear.
Yes, yes. And I, too, am excited and looking forward to the at-home working meditation retreat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Phil's points were so good. Once we get the hang of doing things with that level of mindfulness and see that everything is practice, then whatever we're doing is a good time.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have announcements here.
Oh, good.
If you want me to start there.
Sure.
Okay. Bring conscious, compassionate awareness to your Saturday tasks or any project you choose at an at-home working meditation retreat on March 23rd. The day includes exercises, facilitated virtual discussions, mindful eating, and designated work periods. And you, Sherry, are offering a workshop at Center in the Bay Area on March 31st from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. This opportunity to join the guide is a powerful way to support practice, to experience being in this here now, and to receive the benefits of Sangha's wisdom, love, and compassion. Space is limited, so sign up right away. The Family Karma Retreat with you, Sherry, and Ashwini will help participants see how the, quote, story of me, unquote, was created and how this, quote, notion of self, unquote, unconsciously operates. The retreat, April 15th through 20th in North Carolina, includes yoga, meditation, and guidance with you, Sherry.
Mm-hmm. And as I always point out, in a really pretty spot.
Yes. I think you mentioned Cardinals last week.
Oh, yes. They're the best part.
Yes. Reflective Listening Buddies offers weekly support for conscious, compassionate awareness, requiring participants to show up to practice being present. A new quarter begins April 15th. step away from the pressures of day-to-day living and immerse yourself in a monastic community completely focused on waking up at the Your Practice Retreat, May 4th through 11th at the Zen Monastery Peace Center near Murphy's, California. The retreat offers individualized support with what you choose as your practice focus for the week. And for these and other opportunities, including a new group coaching class, visit livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on, as usual, which is great.
Something for everybody.
Yes, and I need the support, so I'm grateful for it.
Me too. Me too, Michael.
Great. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can press *6 and then 1. That's a way to make guest show and get in the queue. And a conversation of about 5 minutes in length on one topic is great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Sherry, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, this is Brad in Maryland.
Well,
hey, Brad.
Brad, no fire
last
alarm?
Last time we spoke, I was going down a flight of stairs.
Right.
Sorry about that. That was just life happening as I was on the call.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Sherry, you always remember me as one of the ones that had the 70 consistent days of meditation. And when I came to a retreat once, so I want to tell you, it was kind of neat the other day. I used this thing called the Insight Meditation app on my iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing came up that told me I had had 1,300 days of meditation on it, and as well, 464 hours of meditation. So I thought that was something to celebrate, you know?
No kidding. Wow.
So it's just kind of neat how, you know, you don't think about it and then all that time is accrued. So
and the voices say, "Oh, well, you don't practice." You can just say, Hold on a minute. Let me give you some statistics here.
Well, yeah, and not only that, just kind of working through some of the karma and reengaging with Sangha, with the annual retreat, and just all these other things that are kind of pushing some other karma out of the way that was keeping me from practice, I'm that much better off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big one. Another quick little tidbit I wanted to express to you is sometimes I listen to these shows at night when I go to bed, and I had heard someone that was also at the New Year's retreat, and I guess they had had a very scary plane ride home. And I had another thing that was kind of similar in terms of the fact that I left from, I think it's the San Jose airport, and my connecting flight from Chicago didn't happen, so I had to spend the whole night in the airport.
Oh, my gosh.
It was just kind of funny. I was just like, you know, you never know what life's going to provide. And so there I was at the airport the whole night. So that was a new experience for me.
Yes, I actually, we share that experience. In fact, I had that experience so often that I just simply said, I won't fly through Chicago anymore. Thank you very much.
Yes, so, I learned that. I'm like, you know, I think my wife, I said, note to self, we won't do that again. So
that's right.
Anyway, I just wanted to say it's great to be a part of this, and I'm just I'm really excited. And, you know, I suppose I could talk about some things that are coming up for me, or, you know, I can just let someone else get on a call and we can go from there. So anyway, life's good. And I just – well, tell you what, there is one thing.
All right.
The issue I'm having, very quickly, is with the voices talking to me about my role as a parent and how I am – I discuss with my wife in therapy about how, you know, she's very identified with the role of being a mom, and I love being a father, but I think in certain ways the voices tell me that I'm not doing a good enough job. And I know because my father years ago was very much into his activities that I didn't see as much, but my voice felt like I had to go to the other side of duality and always be there for my kids. But now that I'm in the role of a parent, it's very much like, with the ideal comes the actual. And I do need some time for myself to breathe. And the voices just start to lay into me about it.
And is there, do you and your wife do some tag teaming on it?
We do.
And
I feel like I'm doing a great job at that. So on one hand, it's like the reality is this, and then what conditioning is telling me, well, as with most of us know, it isn't true.
That's right. That's right. That was the next one I was going to suggest. It's very likely that you are, in fact, doing a good job, because that's why they're talking about it.
Yeah.
If you weren't doing a good job, they probably wouldn't be mentioning anything. They'd have you focused on something else that you're fine with.
It was other karma before this, and I cleaned up that one area of karma, and now it's like, oh, this is something else we can grab his attention with.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm seeing it, and I'm not trying to indulge him. Just like, I see what's going on here.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, and to not feel bad about it, and to reassure yourself in all your recordings that if there's anything for me to see in this, I'll receive the information. It'll drop in. I'll recognize it. I'll be responsive.
Yeah.
But right now, it's
exactly.
just the voices having a problem, and I don't need to attend to their problems.
Yeah. And one last thing, and this is really scary for me to say, is I would bet with my level of awareness as what it is from consistent practice that my whole root of supposedly what depression is for me is nothing more than ego using that as a way to control me.
I bet you're right.
In other words, when things start to move along and then I wake up and I feel that way and the resistance is there and all of that is there, that's a way of keeping ego intact, because if I supposedly feel bad and I won't do anything, I can't get past it. It's kind of like what you always talk about, like, you know, don't trust your feelings. Do what you've committed to do.
Which is a little window, again, as if we, you know, I mean, I think we can't have too many windows into how nasty that system is.
Yeah, it's horrible.
How truly self-serving, how truly egocentric ego is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. Well, thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
Okay?
We'll talk soon. Take good care. Okay.
Take care. Go happy.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Brad. And Sherry, I have another caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Rico. Can you guys hear me?
Hey, Rico.
Hi, Rico.
Yes, we can hear you. How you
sure
doing?
Oh, boy. Still standing.
And that's no small statement.
That is no small statement. Anyway, I've been dialing to get onto the show for 12 weeks, and persistence pays, I guess. Anyway, Sherry, this work has been such a great support. And as you know, I've been through quite a bit, and I'm coming back. And the takeaway is, like you guys say, just say yes. Yes, please, thank you. There's nothing wrong. So I'm
because
go ahead.
No,
I'm going to hear what you say.
I was just so struck when you said, just the way you laid it out there, it's like, yeah, because really, what choice do we have? It kind of is the only sensible
spring.
So the only sensible, intelligent choice is yes, because it's going to happen anyway.
Well, ain't that the truth?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's like resistance seems futile.
Mm-hmm.
And yet conditioning wants to keep at it, like, No, I... Well, wait a second. Come on, Mike. We don't know how much time is left. Just say yes. Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Which is what the heart wants.
Exactly.
But it becomes so clear. It just gets so clear that is not what ego wants. You know, the belief that people have that system is somehow there to take care of me, or it's watching, it's doing, you know, it's on my, whatever the heck it is. When it, you know, you get to this place of, I don't know, and none of us know, obviously, we have to always say that, but, you know, sometimes the odds are better than others that we don't know how much more time we have. And yet, that system just kicks in exactly the same way, determined that you will not enjoy your life.
Ain't that the truth?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a quote, and I don't remember who said it, but something like, "Endless are the ways a fool can be parted with his money, from his money." And it occurs to me that the same is true for ego I. There are endless are the ways the ego I can delude me. And so
can fool us. Can make fools of us.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And so here I am. I'm saying yes. I mean, it seems like a really heartfelt, sincere yes. Like, wow, I have gone through some adventures. And, whew, okay, here we are, another moment. And so I'm always curious as to whether that is actually what's so, or it's another version of delusion. And a couple days ago, I got another unwelcome, shall we say, diagnosis.
Oh.
And it's almost as if the insight of a few months ago has actually stuck, because the default response is, okay, that's what's happening, okay. Okay, this is what's happening. All right.
And do you feel that let's see, I don't quite know how to ask this question, but it's something along the lines of that actually strengthens you for what's happening?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. What do we say in the daily recollection, ever-expanding faith?
Mm-hmm.
Constant devotion. It's like, and I'm dedicated to this practice, and I'm seeing the fruit of the intention, and yet I just can't imagine how people go through this aging process without that kind of support and insight, and just such a precious opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can see how much suffering would be available if a person were willing to go with that suffering. It would be massive.
Yep. So the other thing is the voices, the self-hate. My Lord, like, I mean, give me a break. You know, you think you'd get a free pass, right, from being
right.
knocking on death's door. And
but no,
I'm home and people are taking care of me, and Rico, you should take a nap. You really don't look as, I don't need a nap. And think, I really do need a nap.
Mm-hmm.
Or I just need to rest. And it's it's so vicious. It's in, and after a while, you'd think the voices would say, "Okay, I'm going to go try somebody else, another game." But
no,
boy, the
never.
Voices just come back never. Again and again in yep. new, renewed, inventive ways
yep.
of beatings.
Yep.
And which is why I project you're practicing so hard, because that is not the last thing we want to hear as we leave.
Really? No, yeah, just.
And without constant devotion, that is what we'll hear.
Boy. And so I can report. Go ahead, please.
No, just again to underline what you were saying, that the assumption is that that kind of transition would somehow be exempt from hatred. But that's not the case.
And I can report from the front lines that as I was nearing what could have been called the portal, there was such there is such acceptance, like, oh God, what a great life and what a good job and nothing, no regrets, and everything is, it's like, wow. So that kind of we don't call it positive thinking, we call it constant devotion.
Uh-huh.
The rubber hits the road, boy. That's what showed up, and
mm-hmm. gratitude.
It does, yep, and mm-hmm. welcome of whatever is arising.
Mm-hmm. What now?
What now?
Yes, please. Thank you. What now?
Really? What now? So.
Well, good. It's good to hear your voice, gratitude. Rico.
Yeah, you too. And the other thing is, you know, I wanted to get on the call and. It hasn't happened, and there's a certain gratitude for every breath, really, where getting on the call, not getting on the call, it's okay. It's all good.
Mm-hmm.
And
because we're all on the call together, right? Whether you and I are talking or somebody else and somebody else are talking,
mm-hmm.
we're all on the call.
And just waking up in the morning, like, oh, the birds are singing, and wow, isn't that wonderful to be alive and to have mm-hmm. another day. Just mm-hmm. and I wish I could give a teaspoonful of this to those around me, to my family. To I guess we have to find out for ourselves.
Yes, and I would project you are giving it to them, right?
Sometimes, I mean, yeah, without expectation, without acknowledgement.
Without expectation, but just to be there and to be unconditionally accepting and loving and present, that's a compelling place to
and,
be.
And even with grandkids who don't ever acknowledge any Christmas gifts or birthday gifts, I say, okay, all right, I'm giving without expectation, giving without attachment, giving without agenda. Oh, here's a way mm-hmm. to love even more.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a way to love the human even more, starting mm-hmm. at home, right here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. Sherry, I don't travel much, and Lord knows when I'll get to see you again, but in a certain way, it's not so, how do you say? I accept, and I just am so grateful for the time I've got to spend with you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I feel grateful, too. Yeah.
Well, I guess we have one of those mutual admiration societies going.
I think so. I see no reason not to.
All right.
I see no argument against it.
No. Thank you so much, Sharon.
Thank you, Rico. Take good care of yourself.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Really. Thank
you. All right. Go happy.
Go happy. Thank you, Michael. So long. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye. Thanks for joining us, Rico. I enjoyed that ever-expanding faith, Sherry, and constant devotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Serves us well, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And we're going to break now and hear from our recording listening program, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. Recording and listening is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, I wanted to remind folks that the Practice Recorder app for the iPhone exists, and it's great for recording and listening, and it's on sale in the App Store for the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. We just talked to somebody last week, wasn't it, who did a little tiny commercial for it, and I think neither one of us thought to say, oh, yeah, that's what that person's talking about.
Yes, yeah. It's a great app, and it works with the new iOS 12 also.
Mm-hmm.
And we have more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Rachel in Pennsylvania.
Well, hello, Rachel.
How are you doing?
Good. Yourself?
Great. It's wonderful to hear your voice.
Well, thank you. Thank you. What's going on?
It's been a long time. I'm stuck in some content, and it's stuck in feeling bad and guilt.
Oh.
So I've been...
Not happy places to be stuck.
No.
No.
I lived in Cameroon many, many years ago, and I've recently connected with a friend of mine, another teacher, through, you know, social media. And right now, where he is in the English-speaking part of Cameroon, there's quite a bit of civil unrest and violence. And I'm starting to receive firsthand accounts through descriptions and pictures, and just recently his son was kidnapped and beaten up, which could have gone much worse, of course, knowing how some of the violence in Africa goes.
And the United States and in... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, you know, it's, you know, as I continue to receive news, you know, and all the troubling news, and I'm just stuck and like feeling bad, feeling out of control. You know, I can't do anything about it. Guilt when I go out and, you know, buy a book, or you know, when I'm living my comfortable life, you know, and with my seemingly petty concerns, you know, here, you know, when I know what's going on to personally to, you know, him and his family. I think I'm, this is a even stickier because it doesn't, it's not self-hate. It doesn't feel like, you know, self-hate or self-beating like, oh, I'm a terrible person. It's because there's this layer, this veneer of caring. Oh, like, you know, I feel so bad. I care for these people and, you know, so, but yet it still is suffering.
And I can promise you it's self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just, it's just coming in through a different door.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not you're an awful person, but you should feel bad if you buy a book.
Mm-hmm.
You should feel bad and guilty if you're living your life. And it's so interesting, isn't it? Because I don't know who said this, and I don't even know if anybody ever said it, but I heard it years ago and was struck by it at the time, which somebody opined that if we were to realize in a moment everything that was going on in the world in that moment, we would have no choice but to kill ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It would just be absolutely overwhelming. Hideously overwhelming, which is why when you said, you know, the violence in Africa, I said, and in the United States, because it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Poverty is everywhere. Violence is everywhere. You know, when I've been looking at this so much lately. The Buddha left us with the encouragement to consider. That what makes this, excuse me, world of suffering revolve is greed, hate, and delusion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to separate those out. They're three separate words that kind of are one and the same, because greed is hateful and delusional. And in delusion, we're greedy and hateful. And, yeah, so that is the... I don't know if we want to say the human condition, but it certainly is the condition of this plane of existence. And so if we are kept in that duality that ego has you in, then all that's really happening is that you are suffering instead of enjoying your life.
Mm-hmm.
You're not helping anybody,
yeah.
Right? But it's in that conditioned way, it feels, yeah, but that's the least I can do. At least I can feel bad,
yeah.
Right? Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so let me ask you about this. Is it true for you that feeling guilty and bad actually... you can sense that it prevents you from doing what you might actually be able to do to make a contribution.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yeah, because the feeling that is sort of the tape recorder, you know, it's just sort of this constant cyclical...
Yeah. It's just draining your energy.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because if you had all the energy that's available to you, mm-hmm. I bet there are lots of ways that you could contribute to the world.
Yeah. But not necessarily like to this particular problem.
Right, which you might choose to do,
yeah.
or you might not. You know, so years ago, I got invited to go to Zambia. To be honest with you, I doubt I knew where Zambia was. I mean, I knew it was in Africa, but
right.
Africa's big. Mm-hmm. Right? And yet somebody invited me there and then said, would you help us?
Mm-hmm.
That's that. I actually didn't want to say no, but it was a direct invitation to do something specific.
Mm-hmm.
And so there might be that for you.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, might be this.
It dropped in when you were saying about the feeling bad, is that in a way maybe that's sort of a lazy person, like a way to feel like I'm doing something. So I have a
Absolutely.
Little control through feeling bad, but yep. I'm actually not doing anything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. And I wouldn't make it quite so pejorative, but yes, I do think that's what we're conned into. You know, I hate the fact that people are starving to death. I hate it. It makes me so angry. That's self-righteous,
mm-hmm.
and that feels somewhat powerful, but I haven't fed anybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's huge. That's how we do our part. We feel bad. We feel guilty.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And could you speak just briefly, you know, I know in the past you've mentioned about people being equal to their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow it feels, for some of these more extreme situations, you know, how I'm going into my head trying to figure that out in a sense. How is that possible?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For
right. Yeah. And you can't.
Okay.
You can't figure it out. I mean, not just you.
Yeah.
We can't
yeah.
figure it out. Because if there were any validity to that, I mean, look at this country, for God's sake. Now, you know, I love my country, okay? And we are the most privileged, spoiled, nasty bunch of folks ever assembled, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
we, you know, we have people in this culture who could end, who have enough money to end major problems right here in our own country by themselves with the money that they control. And instead, they're busy trying to hide it offshore somewhere so they don't have to pay taxes on it.
Mm.
So now I don't believe for a second that that's a happy way to live.
Yeah.
With that thinking, that if you have enough privilege, you're automatically in well-being, or you're automatically better off,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it is. I don't believe that for a second. So I also don't believe for a second that we need to feel sorry for people who are living in circumstances that we know we couldn't live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really hard one. That's
it is. It is.
And there are different levels, you know. So just poverty, hunger is one thing, but outright violence and
yep.
you know
yep.
and killing, you know, the nasty machete violence, and you know that
yeah.
feels like another level of
yes, it does. Yes, it does. And I would suggest that, do you live in a city in Pennsylvania?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What city do you live in?
Harrisburg.
Harrisburg. And are there neighborhoods in Harrisburg where mothers are afraid for their children to go outside because of violence in the street?
Yeah, I would.
Because of random shootings?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's. It's easy, I think, for us to get fooled by content
mm-hmm.
and lose sight of process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because if my child is killed by a stray bullet in an attempted robbery or a drive-by shooting, or is killed by a machete, I'm not really going to care about how that happened.
Right.
I don't know if that was too big a leap.
No. I, because thinking about projecting how terrible, you know, the violence that I'm hearing about in Africa, you know, it seems worse than the violence I'm hearing about in the U.S. But yeah, there is no. It's.
It's all the same process, isn't it?
Right. I'm just projecting a level of severity or a continuum of severity. So,
Yeah. And so it brings us back to our original, doesn't it? So how would you like to participate? That seems like the question.
Yeah.
Right? What would take that energy from being something that self-hate can use against you of guilt and feeling bad, and how can that be turned into love?
Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, I'm thinking instead of, you know, the clutching onto the feeling bad is more clutching onto maybe the question in that, you know, that yes, or what mm-hmm. maybe a question of what.
mm-hmm.
What can
mm-hmm.
I do? What's there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. How can I help?
Yeah, how can I help?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How might I contribute to, and you know, we don't have to know that we're right. So people have said to me, you know, with the work we do in Zambia, but aren't you robbing them of their culture? I mean, introducing them to computers and that sort of thing. And and my response, first of all, is as far as I could tell, they didn't have a culture they weren't happy to let go. Poverty and oppression and no future, and that's not exactly a culture most people are going to cling
mm-hmm.
to. And do I know that what we're doing is the right thing to do? No. I don't know that. It's just what has occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's what's occurred to us. And so this is what we do. If it turns out to be not helpful or the wrong thing, we'll find out.
Okay. Well, that's an insight. Very much, because all along, you know, we're celebrating, we're contributing. This is such a great thing. But you're right, you don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We just make the best choices we can from where we are.
Yeah.
And the one thing that we're pretty darn sure about is that guilt and feeling bad is not a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I just landed on chapter 4 of The Bamboozles, so, which is feeling bad. So. Good timing.
Yeah, we're so well taken care of, aren't we? And, you know, exactly in that way, right? Just
uh-huh.
exactly like that. We start looking and here it is. Just this drops in and this drops in and there's a piece of that, and I see that, and okay,
mm-hmm.
and now this, and here we go.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I'm convinced, is what that negativity, the guilt and feeling bad, is there to keep us from experiencing.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much. This has been so nice.
You'll let us know, right?
Yeah.
You'll let us know.
Yeah.
All right.
It's this phone call. It took about a month of...
getting ready.
Yeah, even though the content only recently came up, but
uh-huh.
So, all right.
Good.
Well, thank you so
Good.
Much, Deepka Show.
Oh, thank
happy
you.
To be here.
To you. Yeah, go happy.
Good night.
Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rachel. Sherry, what I saw in that conversation is that feeling bad becomes a portal through which I see the opportunity to respond, to get out of the feeling bad and to see what's here in front of me that I can contribute to or participate with.
Yes. gosh, somebody was just talking about that, Michael. I can't remember where or who, and it really doesn't matter. But that idea that I know, yes, that I'm having an experience, and what I know I can do is just turn my attention away from that, and so I don't have to have that experience. But to stay with the experience and trust that there's something for me in this experience. There's actually information. So like that, like you just said, so I'm feeling bad. Well, what's here? What's that? What is that about? Not just turn my attention away, but, you know, I there's something there, you know, I want to contribute. I want to participate in some way. I want to learn to choose love and make a difference somewhere. Do the best I can in something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Great.
Yeah.
And we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Jessica from Oregon.
Hello, hey, Jessica.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Well, I feel like what's going on with me is really similar to what you were just talking about. But I also wanted to say real quick that I'm participating in the year-long retreat, and it's my first time, and I can't believe it's been 9 or 10 days, and I can't believe how powerful that is. It's
crazy,
it's
isn't it?
Just been, yeah, it's so huge. And I'm like, wow, if I would have known, you know, I would have been doing this last year and the year before. But man, thank you so much for offering that. It's just incredible. I'm so excited to be part of it.
You're welcome. And thank you for saying that. And I hope there are people listening who haven't signed up who will, because people still can. You can see now why we couldn't stop, right? We did that the first year, and practice just, you know, escape velocity. And so we had to do it the next year, and then it was obvious the second year. I mean, it's just so transformative. We had to do it again.
Yes.
And each time, you know, this is really Ashwini's brainchild, okay? She comes up with these things. And and with each one, the first one, I didn't know that much about it. So I thought, yeah, I can see that. The second one, I thought, I can't see how this is going to work, you know. And, oh, my gosh, I mean, people are just, you know, their lives are just exploding in awareness. And so when she came up with this one, I thought, okay, I'm just going to go with it. I'm just going to trust. That it's gonna, and already, as you say, 9 or 10 days in, it's like, oh my goodness gracious!
Yes, yes.
Here we go.
Just incredible.
Yeah.
So, there's something that I've been looking at, a process that I've been watching, and I just kind of wanted to share a little bit about that. I'm really getting to see how this conversation in the head keeps us from participating and keeps us from, like you guys were just talking about, sticking with an experience and seeing what you need to see. So I don't know how to talk about this without talking about content, so I'll just talk a little bit. But I've been I'm in a graduate counseling program. And I've been counseling people in training, and it's been a really tough experience. Just with the voices, like every time I get done with the session and I go home, it's just this barrage of, you know, information about how I did, what I did, what I didn't do, and even if it's not terrible, just reviewing it over and over and over. So, one of the big pieces around that is my supervisor, my clinical supervisor, and just really feeling not very supported and feeling like I'm getting this negative feedback and getting really focused on that. So I know it's a conversation, but I'm just not seeing what's true. So
okay.
I was getting really, really worked up about this last week. And I talked to my husband, and it's like, well, you know, maybe you should say this to him or say that to him. And I'm thinking, yeah, but I know this isn't what's going on. So I decided, okay, I'm going to go into supervision, and I'm going to pay such close attention to what is being said, exactly what's being said to me. Am I really being criticized? Am I really, you know, being told this and that? So I go into supervision, and I'm paying attention, and it's like none of that is present. None of that is happening.
He's not saying that.
In fact, no, he's not saying that. And in fact, he's saying the exact opposite. It's like, it's like, you know, I'm doing a good job, and the things that I'm coming up with to do in counseling, you know, he, you know, he's like sort of in alignment with that. And it's like, and I knew that the second I left that room, like I had to get that on a recorder because it was just going to disappear. So I went out and I recorded, and then I go through my day and I go home, and my husband was like, well, how did it go? And what immediately came up, even though I had watched, was this like negative story about the whole thing. And I told him, I said, I got to be honest with you. Like, I paid such close attention that I know what really happened in that session. But when you ask me about this, it is this like terrible, terrible story. And it was so, so profound for, I mean, it was kind of scary to see how that story just came up and would have just come out if I had not been paying such close attention to what actually happened.
Yep.
And I just, it was like, this is probably happening everywhere in my life.
Yes. Well, not
everywhere.
Just your life.
Oh, yeah, of course, everyone, my counseling client's life.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, because that's exactly what happens. People go out, they leave home in the morning, they come home at the end of the day, how was your day? Oh, and they tell the one thing that is a negative.
Yep.
That's how that system works, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And it just I know it sounds so obvious, but like to actually see it. And okay.
Oh, no, it's not obvious. Oh, no. Not at all. As you say, it's just because you were so devoted to actually hearing what was said, and then you recorded it. You knew you needed to record it because you knew what was going to happen. And then you were so present when you came home and your husband asked you that, and you watched the system rev up and start into it. It's not smart, is it? The system is not smart. That's what you that's what you got out of this, right? Because if it was smart, it wouldn't do those things when you're paying really close attention. But it's a program.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have any choice about it.
Yeah. Right. And I saw like how, I mean, I didn't choose to have that pop into my head. It was literally like a mechanism, just popped up.
Yep.
And it was like,
how was your day, honey? Oh, God. Let me tell you.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm just so excited to start looking for that everywhere.
Yes. Yes.
Everywhere.
And of course, I'm so glad you said recording and listening. I'm so glad you recorded it because you're exactly right. That would have disappeared. By the time you got home, you would have probably been so caught up in whatever the loop was giving you currently that awareness would have been gone. And when your husband asked that question, you would have been right there with some bogus tale that it was going to tell him about what happened. So the recording when I first started doing this work, I would go out and I would do a workshop for the weekend.
And on the drive home, exactly what you described would happen to me, right? And it was just hideous. It's how I actually recognized self-hate for the first time and realized that those voices talking to me were hateful, number one, and I couldn't stop them. I wasn't thinking it. I could tell that they were talking to me, which was kind of a revelation, right? And so, of course, what you know, not that this is going to stop you from being aware, okay, but you want to have some recordings to listen to when you come out of working with client so that that doesn't happen to you, because you're not going to hear anything new at this juncture.
Yeah. And that was one of my, like, one of the first thoughts that I had yesterday was like, okay, so what do I need to put in place? How do I support being connected to this truth now that I see it?
Yes. And I would suggest that that's it. That the recordings that you make, that so you have one as soon as you walk out of a session with a client that reminds you that hateful voices in your head are not going to offer you any insights. It is not helpful to listen to it. Whatever insights you need will come to you via intuition. There are no reviews, none, you know, and you begin to practice with that so that that's your go-to response when you come out of a session. Okay. And then as you train yourself in that way, that's the attitude of mind you bring to it. Now, and you can do that and have awareness broad enough, expanded enough, that insights will come to you as you're listening and making those recordings. So you're not going to miss any good information by listening to a recording about what you know to be true.
Is that all hanging together? I see what you're saying. Yeah, so like, listening to what I know to be true is not going to prevent any insight that I need about what happened or, you know, what, okay.
Yeah, it'll just cut off the barrage of self-hatred. And what you'll be doing in that is training yourself to listen to the recording, to listen to what is true, and also to watch for the insights, the clarity that's going to come to you, the helpful information.
Right, because that other information isn't helpful, and it prevents me from doing what I need to do. I start to get shut down when that's happening.
Oh, yeah. Well, you could see the way it was positioning you could have ruined your career. Because if it convinces you that your supervisor is against you because you're doing a bad job, and even if you know, you could be convinced, well, no, I think I'm doing, the doubt that is going to be shown and the suspicion and feeling, I mean, that's not going to end well.
Yes. Oh, man. I'm just laughing because it was, I mean, I was seeing that part of it too, you know, like, I could hold on, you know, I was still making recordings and stuff, and I was holding on to sort of this thread of like, okay, I know something else is probably happening, but yeah, the doubt is just so strong.
Yes, and the practice, happily, is stronger. Because you went to, I don't think that this is true. There's something off here. I got to find out what is so. I was just talking with somebody recently about that same process in a relationship. That the same thing that you described with your supervisor is how people leave relationships, right? Because that voice starts in.
Yep. So that's maybe the next content area for me too. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it'll do it. It'll start a campaign, and then it's watching. And it's building cases, and I wish to, and if we don't nip it, then before long, we're in big dissatisfaction, and the relationship is over,
and we're out.
Without ever, and we're out without ever having a chance to do what you did with your supervisor, which is to go into it clear-eyed and say, now, wait a minute, what's actually happening here? I'm okay leaving this relationship, but that's fine. But what's actually happening?
Right.
Is this actually my choice?
Right. Yeah. It's so, it strikes me how courageous it is too, you know, that we do that, like that we're looking at this and we're just.
Because it's
so
hateful. It's hateful. Yeah. And to go up against it, we all know how hard it is to face down a bully. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, think how much better therapist you're going to be as a result of all of this.
I know.
That's
and see, right?
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So this benefits not just me, but hopefully others as well.
Oh, yes. Because you're not afraid to do the work that you're going to assist them to do. You're doing the work yourself. That gives you credibility that you can't get out of a textbook.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Go happy, huh?
Yes, go happy.
All right. And talk to you tomorrow.
Yes. Looking forward to it.
That's right. Me too. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jessica. And that was a fabulous conversation and a fabulous show, Sherry. So thank you and thank everyone.
Thank you. Yes, and thank everyone. And let's all go happy.
Go happy and don't get to judge yourself.
Go happy and what? You kind of cut out for a second.
Don't forget to treasure yourself.
That's right. Don't forget to treasure ourselves. Yeah. All right.
All right.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.